you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. The Twilight Histories has many clients who love battlefield tourism, and experiencing a real-life historical battle is often the pinnacle of all life experiences for these special clients. Today, you will follow a small tour group who believes they are about to watch the Battle of Agincourt. In our timeline, Henry V invaded France in 1415. And the French king gathered together all the knights in the realm to slaughter the invader in one great charge. He failed. Will the multiverse serve up the same battle? Or will something very different happen? We are, of course, doing a French-themed show to inspire you to join us in France next year. In May, I'll be joining a small group of Twilight Histories fans for a week in a medieval castle. It was expanded during the time of Henry V and the Hundred Years' War that followed. We'll be located down the street from a medieval fortress town, which we'll be visiting, of course, and we have some day trips planned to other incredible sites in France. This is slated as a writing retreat, and I'll be leading some workshops, but you don't have to be an expert to join. I just want you there. I want you there. So please, go to the website and fill out an application. That's twilighthistories.com. And just before we launch into today's show, I'd like to recommend a podcast to you. Eastern Border is different from anything else I've ever heard before. It's a podcast by a journalist named Christophe Andresons, who lives in Eastern Europe. In the podcast, he describes what life is like living on the border with Russia. He does this in a very intimate and personal way. He's also done some war journalism in Ukraine, and he tells me he's going back there, which does concern me a bit. Longtime listeners of the Twilight Histories know we have a strong relationship with Eastern Border. We've done collaborations together, and Christophe's has even written some bonus shows that are up in our Patreon area. I was lucky enough to meet Christophe's when he came to Canada a couple of years ago, and I call him my friend. I highly recommend you check out Eastern Border. That's Eastern Border by Christophe Andresons. And now, for today's show, The Legions of Agincourt by myself, Jordan Harbour. You look up at the sky. It's cloudy, and you have to squint your eyes against the rain. You're in a field. The mud is thick and sucks at your English boots. You have to use your longbow to balance yourself. You turn to your group. It's just a professor and his student. The student is eager, bright-eyed and excited. The professor is gray-haired and miserable. You learned during the orientation that they've never split worlds before, and they've certainly never seen a dead body. You're worried about that. People tend to freeze up when they see death for the first time. They either freeze up or they run. And that's a dangerous thing to happen in battlefield tourism. You've lost a number of tourists due to their inexperience, and these two look green.
"Is this it?" the professor says. "Is this the battlefield?"
"It's the field, all right," you say. "Not much of a field, unfortunately."
"And it's going to happen tomorrow?"
"Yep, the Battle of Agincourt. It's happening tomorrow."
"Where will the lines form?" the student says.
"If everything goes as planned, the French will form ranks way over there on the far side of the field, you say, pointing your longbow across the mud-soaked earth. And the English will come up from over there. You swing your bow behind you. It's a pretty simple battle, actually. The French will charge and the English will shoot them. It's basically like any other battle where one side has projectile weapons and the other doesn't. The Zulu Wars, the Somme. Have you seen those battles? The student says.
Yeah, I've seen them.
You were at the Somme?
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. But all battles are kind of like that when you get right down to it. Different uniforms, different weapons. But they're all kind of the same after a while. Just a lot of blood and fear and sweat.
When you were at the Somme, were you on the German or British side?
German. The important thing with these tours is that you pick the right side of the battle. Otherwise, you end up dead.
The professor rolls his eyes.
You think that's pretty obvious, do you, eh? Well, it's not always obvious. No side goes in thinking they're going to lose, and often in different universes, surprises can happen. Can you think of anything that should have happened in a battle that didn't?
The two ponder the question, or at least the student appears to. The professor looks out at the field. You lean into your bow and let the student think this one through. You've got time.
I'll give you a hint. Since Agincourt is all about cavalry and projectiles, can you think of any other battle like that? Can you think of a cavalry charge that ended up in a massacre?
There was the charge of the Light Brigade, I guess, the student says.
That's the one. And what happened there? What went wrong?
Miscommunication. The general sent a message that wasn't clear. It could have been read either way.
Right. And the result?
The cavalry interpreted it the wrong way. They charged against a well-defended position and they were slaughtered.
That sounds about right. Should that have happened?
What do you mean by should have? It did happen, the professor says.
Well, let me put it to you this way. What would need to have changed for the Light Brigade not to have gotten slaughtered that day?
Well, says the student, the note could have been more clear.
So you're saying that all those men were slaughtered, the absolute pride of the English Empire, because of a few squiggles on a piece of paper?
Yes, I suppose so.
So this, you raise your hand and pretend to squiggle in the air, led to this, you say, and expand your arm to the field in front of you. Or at least something like what the French are going to experience tomorrow at the Battle of Agincourt. Just that tiny little movement led to an unimaginable slaughter. Mothers crying, nation in shock, poems and songs and histories echoing through the ages. All just because of a little squiggle on a piece of paper.
The student looks thoughtful. The professor looks bored.
What if instead of this, you pretend to write in the air, he had done this.
You squiggle your finger slightly differently.
Just a tiny little difference. A couple words. Maybe just a little more care given. That would have changed the entire battle, no? The charge of the Light Brigade would never have happened.
True, yes, Professor says, piping in.
So, if you ended up in a world where you had to ride with the Light Brigade, how likely are you to be sent on a suicide mission?
Pause for dramatic effect.
Well, you say to the older professor. I'm not sure, he says. Exactly. You're not sure. And that's the point. We don't know who's going to win tomorrow. 1,000 things could happen differently. 1,000 major things. 1,000,000,000,000 minor things.
But the English are going to win, right? The student says.
That's what happened in our timeline, yes, but we don't know if it's going to happen in this world. Those French knights are the tanks of the medieval world, and there will be thousands of them charging towards us tomorrow. Something different could happen, a seemingly insignificant event that we might not even notice. And then the battle flips. There's no way to predict it.
I thought this was a sure thing, the professor says.
Of course it's not a sure thing. Nothing is certain in life, and that's especially true in the multiverse. This is God's sandbox, where he plays around with different outcomes. But we thought... He trails off. He looks over the battlefield, but this time with concern. He pulls his back straight. I was not aware we were visiting a world where the battle could have happened any differently. From the moment we arrived, this world has been diverting from our own in ways we cannot fathom. So you're saying our safety is at stake? You can't help but laugh. Of course our safety is at stake. We're going into battle. This field will be filled with bodies tomorrow. We might die. That's what you signed up for, and I'm stupid enough to risk it with you because that's my job. But I'm going to try to keep you alive. I've been through a lot of battles, and I haven't died yet. A lot of battles. That's what I do. It's my specialty at the Twilight Histories. You just make sure you stick with me. Do what I say, and don't freeze up. Got it? They both nod. Feel at least satisfied you made yourself clear. You see movement in the tree line. You zoom in and catch the glint of armor on human shapes. Okay, team. The English have started to arrive. Before we go over there, what can you tell me about the English? The professor rolls his eyes again. The English of this period are my specialty. Yes, but how should you act? As you should. That doesn't mean anything. Look, these people are rough. They'll stab you if you look at them the wrong way. You can roll your eyes at me all you want, I don't care. But don't you dare insult them. They'll take it personally, and then you'll have to fight. Understood? And for God's sake, do whatever the captains tell you. They'll cut your ear off for looking at them wrong. Understood? We're going into a den of thieves. These people are rough. They're fighters, street fighters. They're about as uncivilized as you can get. So you stay close to me. If someone talks to you, look down. I'll do the talking. If you find yourself on your own, put on your hood and keep your eyes down. Got it? Yes, understood. Okay, follow me, you say, and start mucking towards the forest through the thick mud. The rain is starting to come down hard. You look up at the sky, squinting as the rain hits your eyes. Well, at least we have that in our favor, you say. What do you mean? The student says. Cavalry charges and mud don't mix. You see a tree fall at the edge of the forest. Two soldiers appear and start to cut off the branches. You zoom in to get a better look. These soldiers look strange. They're in matching tunics, but they don't look English. One of them climbs onto the felled tree to cut off the top branches. You see his feet. He's wearing sandals. Are those Henry V's men? The student says. I'm not sure. I don't think so. Are they French? The professor says. They don't look French, you say. The soldier standing on the tree notices you and does a double take. You can see him straining his eyes. You must be just a trio of specks out in the field. The soldier says something to his companion, and now they're both staring at you. Then, the one on the ground runs back into the tree line. That's it, you say. We've been discovered. Now remember what I told you. Keep your mouths shut. Five horsemen leave the forest and ride towards you. They're wearing the same long draping cloaks you saw on the foresters, but their hoods are down, and you can clearly see Roman legionary helmets. How did you end up in this world? Bloody Twilight Histories, sending you to the wrong world again. You shake your head. Never mind. This is the reality. Romans, not English. Romans. You've had plenty of experience with Romans. Count to 10 in Latin to get your tongue warmed up. Are those Romans? The student says. Quiet, I'm thinking, you say. What's your plan? They could kill you right here. It'd be easier for them. They're obviously preparing for battle, and you might be spies. Even if you're not spies, you've seen too much. You might spread rumors. They'll probably kill you. You have to give them something to chew on. Look confident, you say over your shoulder to your tour group. The horsemen slow as they approach. Their calves are knotted with muscle. Their faces grim and lined. These are strong men, veterans.
Who are you?
The leader barks. You feign surprise.
Scouts,
you say, in perfect Latin. You even layer on a little accent from the Subura district in Rome for authenticity. Now it's the horseman's turn to look surprised.
Any news?
He says.
Not for you. Where's the prefect?
The leader looks over at his companions as though stunned by your insolence.
What kind of costume is that?
Just dressing like the locals.
Well, you going to show us to the prefect or what?
The leader shrugs and motions you to follow. What's going on? The professor says to you.
We're in the wrong world, you say. I hope you like Romans.
Busy cutting down trees. They're stripping a large copse at a remarkable pace. Beyond the copse is another field, and here you see the fort being erected, an imposing palisade wall with corner battlements and a gatehouse in one of the walls. A deep ditch is being augered in the wet mud. As you approach, you see Roman soldiers shoveling water up to their waists. You've always been amazed by the Roman army. They seem to be forged from a different substance in flesh. Of course, from your campaigns with the Romans in China, you saw a different side of their character. But these are not imperial soldiery from a distant universe. These are Caesar's men, and the famous emblem of the 13th Legion hangs from the gatehouse. You are at the fields of Agincourt, perhaps. At least they look that way. You recognize them. But this is 1,500 years earlier. They'll be up against bare-chested Gauls, not heavily clad French knights. You cross the bridge and enter the castrum. It's more than a fort. It's a small city built in an afternoon by an army of engineers, and it's large enough to fit 20,000 soldiers. Straight streets are lined with tents. In the center are stables and officers' tents, including one which is Caesar's. You've marched with Caesar before. It was a long time ago, but you remember.
We can take it from here,
you say to your escort of horsemen. The leader shrugs and steers his stallion out of the castrum, his retinue following.
Now what? The professor says. How exactly did we end up in ancient Rome?
Relax. Want to see Caesar?
Caesar? Really? The student says. The professor glares at him.
Your company has sent us to the wrong world. I expect to be compensated for this.
You laugh.
You're complaining about seeing Julius Caesar? This is the 13th.
I paid for Agincourt.
The Battle of Agincourt. It's for my research. This cost me my entire grant. What am I going to do with Romans? How will that help my research?
Relax, Pop. Look around you. I'm sure you'll find something interesting here.
Looks like your student is. My student isn't paying for this. This is my career. I expect to be reimbursed.
The Twilight Histories doesn't reimburse anyone. You know that.
Look over there. That's Caesar. Julius Caesar.
You're approaching the main tent. The flap is opened and you can see inside. Caesar is looking down at what's probably a map and is surrounded by a group of people in togas.
Come on, let's go say hi.
We're just going to walk up and say hi to Julius Caesar?
Sure, why not, kid?
You say, and walk towards the main tent. You turn around after a while and see the professor and a student cowering behind you.
What's the matter with you guys? It's just Caesar. They're poking fun, and it feels good. But, honestly, I'm a bit worried. I don't have a good cover story prepared for this, and Caesar is a bit of a maniacal psychopath, despite his reputation for being generous. He's also smart. You walk up to Caesar's tent. He looks up at you. He does a double take. He looks surprised. You clear your throat.
Caesar, we're back from scouting.
Everyone out, he says. This surprises you. It's not usually like this. He usually conducts his business fast. He follows the rich senators to the door of the tent and closes the flap behind them, leaving just you and your tour group inside with him. Who are you? He says.
We're scouts, sir.
Cut the crap. I can sense your chips. Now, who are you and what are you doing in my world? Oh, come on, pick up your mouths, you fools. Are you on a tour? Why are you dressed like English soldiers?
Are you with the Twilight Histories? You say.
Yes, of course I'm with the Twilight Histories. Are you an agent? Is this your group? How did you get into this world?
But you're Julius Caesar.
Aren't you an idiot? We always change our physical profile when we split worlds.
No, we don't. I've never seen anyone change their face before.
You're from the Twilight Histories?
Yes.
You're an agent?
Yes.
And you don't augment your physical profile?
No, I've never even heard of that.
Wait, what year is it in your world?
2417.
Ah, okay, that explains it.
Explains what?
You're from the past. I'm from 50 years in your future. You're back in Urumqi, aren't you?
Yes.
In my world, the Twilight Histories is on the moon. It's much safer on the moon. No rebels or civil wars. And the machinery doesn't rust. It's fully modern. Bought and paid for by the Twilight Histories.
You're from the future?
My future? Oh, I don't know about your future. That might be a bit of a paradox.
Right, of course. Sorry, I'm just trying to digest this.
Well, it's certainly strange. I wonder how it happened. Maybe the wormholes collided. Never heard of that happening before. But I suppose it could. So, what are you here for? The Battle of Agincourt?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, are you ever in for a treat?
What do you mean?
Tomorrow, we're going to fight the French.
What? How?
Okay, look. You're from the early days when the Twilight Histories was just a scrappy startup. In an old dump up back in Urumqi, right?
Yes, I won't take offense.
Well, things have come a long way since your time. We do things on a whole different level now. Back in your time, you couldn't even properly calibrate that old wreck of a particle accelerator to get you to the right place. But in my time, we can pick up whole armies and pop them in different universes. These Romans didn't even know it was happening. They just woke up and they're here. And it can be so much fun. You want to see Rommel's Africa Corps dropped in the middle of Kansas? Now that's a surprise. How about a battle royale between the Mongols and Napoleon? Maybe leave a crate of AK-47s for Genghis, just to spice things up. Or how about the Spartans versus the Zulus? Or the Aztecs against the Celts? Or Alexander versus the Mohawks? We offer war adventures on a whole new level. And oh, you are in luck this time. Shall I take you around, give you the grand tour?
I guess so, you say.
I have to say, it's kind of exciting to meet someone from the early days. I feel like I'm meeting a celebrity, like an ancient grandparent. You're a piece of my own history.
He leads you out of the tent. The senators pop to attention.
Oh, don't mind them. That's my tour group. A bunch of losers, if you ask me. Apparently, this is a stag party. That's the groom, he says, and points to a bored-looking man, picking his nails.
Caesar is walking fast. The guy seems a bit manic to you. Wonder what he did to the original Caesar. Even though you have no love for Caesar as a person, you still spent a lot of time with him on campaign. You don't like the idea of him being killed just for a tour. It's one thing to explore other worlds and witness battles, but it's a totally different thing to manufacture death matches just for entertainment. You decide you don't like it. Gives you a queasy feeling. Clouds part, and the sun shines through. Uh-oh, Caesar says. We don't like that. Caesar, or whoever he is, leads you back through the forest. You find yourself back at the edge of the field, but now you see hundreds of Romans toiling over breastworks of ditches and spiked logs. You see this? Caesar says. This is what the French are up against tomorrow. Oh, holy Jupiter, are they in for a surprise? They think they're up against a band of poor thieves, a bunch of sick, scraggly, rotten-toothed losers. Even against the longbow, the French almost always win at Agincourt. It's usually a cakewalk. 20,000 knights against 6,000 peasants. But, oh ho, not this time. Julius Caesar's famous 13th Legion, fighting the most terrifying knight army from the Middle Ages. Who do you think will win? Do you have longbows? The professor says. Caesar scowls. I've got legions. They're way better than Henry V's army. How can you even compare them? The English did have the longbow. What have you got? Look at these breastworks. We're building a fortress on the battlefield. How will their knights get past these? Do you have anything to shoot at them? Of course I do. I've got catapults and ballistas, and the common soldiers can toss their pilums. There's no way the French will beat us. Aren't those ballistas for sieges? No way. We can use them in battle. We can fire spears at them. But how fast can you reload? Each English archer can shoot 6 arrows a minute, and there were 5,000 archers. That's 30,000 armor-piercing arrows every minute, and the battle lasted 2 hours. It's okay, you whisper to the professor. Caesar seems to be taking this personally. You don't know what that means yet. He seems a bit erratic. Look, you little punk from the past. I have Caesar's legions. I know exactly how this battle works, because I've run it before. It's easy. And it's fun. I win every time. You should just be lucky you're here instead of pestering me with your worthless trivia. I look across the field. You zoom in and see the fires of the French. They'll be cooking by now and having a good boast about how many English they'll kill tomorrow. Will they ever be in for a surprise? But maybe the professor is partly right. The Romans don't have longbows. That could make a difference. Knights against Romans. Who will win? Tomorrow will tell. It's mid-afternoon. The sun is high in the sky, and the field is steaming from the heat. You've run battlefield tours at Agincourt before, and it was always rainy. This is new. It's been sunny all morning, and the field is drying out fast. But a team of Romans were working all night on the battlements, spread out across the field. It will be a wall of horrors for any cavalry foolish enough to charge it. The Roman legions are safely lined up behind these impressive fortifications. Why won't they charge? Caesar says. The field is hardening up by the minute. This is the perfect time for them to charge.
The English had to come out of their fortifications and shower them with arrows in our timeline, the professor says. It was the only way to get the French moving. Don't you have any archers?
Archers? Of course I have some archers. I have a whole company of Cretans. He snaps at his messenger, who runs up. He gives the order. I don't have time for this, he says. Let's smoke them out.
20 minutes later, you see a loose group of archers leave the protection of the fortifications and walk onto the field.
They walk for what feels like an eternity towards the line of French armor glinting in the sun in the far distance. You see movement among the French lines. You zoom in. There are soldiers filing through the ranks of tightly packed knights. You zoom in further. They're crossbowmen.
What's the range of your Croatian archers? You say to Caesar.
How should I know?
You turn to the professor.
What do you think? You say.
I would say a maximum of about 400 to 500 feet. But you're probably talking about under 100 feet for accuracy. That's about the range of a small composite bow.
And those French crossbowmen?
Oh, easily twice that. 1,000 feet for a long-distance shower, 500 for a targeted kill.
What are you two muttering about? Caesar says.
Crossbowmen, you say, pointing down the field.
What are they doing there? I didn't know the French had crossbowmen.
Ah, never mind. My Croatians will dispatch them. They can fire faster than those clumsy machines.
The crossbows can fire twice as far as your archers,
the professor says.
And they can shoot all day without tiring.
Nonsense, Caesar says,
but he looks concerned. The crossbowmen have now formed 3 long ranks across the field and are shouldering their weapons. The Croatian archers are coming within range.
Do you think I should call them back?
You hear Caesar say to the professor.
I would absolutely call them back, he says.
This might not work. I think I'd better call them back.
He snaps at the messenger, who then clicks his heels.
Call off the archers.
A trumpet sounds. The archers stop and look confused. You see them talking with each other.
Hundreds of black arrows slam into the crowded Croatian archers, and a third of them collapse to the ground.
You look up at the French crossbowmen in time to see the second row fire their bolts.
Call them off, you fool!
Caesar yells at the trumpeter, who again blasts out the call. You look back at the field. The surviving archers have thrown down their bows and are running back towards your lines. They're picked off one by one until they're out of range of the crossbowmen.
Why won't they charge? Caesar says. This was a great chance to charge. They could have taken out the rest of my archers.
You hear screams and moans of the wounded in the field. Some of the survivors are dragging themselves. Others are writhing in pain.
Damn, damn, damn,
Caesar says. He paces back and forth.
I don't want to hear a word from you, he says to the professor. Or you,
he points a finger at your face.
Or any of you,
he says to his tour group. They're looking a little less bored now and are taking some interest in the rout of the Croatian archers. Caesar crosses his arms, then puts his hand on his chin, rubbing it vigorously, as though it might conjure up some inspiration.
You seem smart. Any other bright ideas?
He says to the professor.
Do you have anything that you could actually hurt them with?
The professor says.
What do you mean? Of course I do. I have the whole bloody legion.
What about your siege weapons?
You fool. Do you think I'm going to roll those out in the middle of the battlefield? Look how far away those knights are. That's a ridiculous idea. If they charge, I could fire them. But they're not charging. How do I get them to charge already?
What about your cavalry? Could you harass them through the forest?
That's a thought. Yes, we could try that. I don't need those useless cavalry anyway. They don't even have stirrups.
Caesar orders his cavalry to harass the French through the forests. The trumpets sound. Moments later, you see the cavalry split off and disappear into the trees.
That should at least do something, Caesar says.
I'm not sure, you say.
What do you mean?
The French will have those woods teeming with crossbowmen, sharpshooters. They'll pick them off.
Why didn't you say something?
Do you think we should call them back? I don't think you should have sent them in, with all due respect to the professor.
The professor's eyes are fierce.
What do you think? Caesar says to the student.
Oh, don't put me in the middle of this, he says.
Ha! The coward's response. Well, I don't need those cavalry anyways. They would just be wasted. Let them cause some pain in the French ranks.
You may need them later, you say. I wouldn't waste your cavalry.
Roman cavalry is just for show.
It's the legions that really count. They may come in handy in a rearguard action. A rearguard action? You mean retreat? Pfft. You wait painful minutes. Then you hear it. The sounds of combat deep in the forests. Whinnying horses, screaming men. A riderless horse dashes out of the woods and into the field. You see a bolt in its flank. After a while, the moans of the dying in the forest are cut short. We didn't need them anyways, Caesar says, but quietly.
I think you're just going to have to advance on them, the professor says.
I've been thinking the same thing.
That's a terrible idea, you say. There's no way you can beat them in the open field. They know it, and you know it.
I don't think that's true. Sure, the knights will chew through the front ranks, but they can only charge once. And after that, the legions will drag them off their horses and slaughter them on the ground.
Don't do it, I'm telling you. It's a terrible idea. You're playing right into their hand. Do not underestimate those knights. The best thing you can do right now is pull back to the fort.
I will do nothing of the sort. I have a tour group to impress.
They don't look very impressed, you say, and it's true. The senators look extremely bored. A couple of them are starting to play dice.
They're all idiots, Caesar says, but I've got to win this thing.
Then pull back to the fort, I'm telling you.
No, this ends today. Who cares? We can always just jet out of here if it doesn't work out. Release the legions.
All the trumpets blast. You grab Caesar by the kerchief and pull him in. The officers leap to his side. You idiot, you say. Yeah, you don't care. You can just split out of here whenever you like. But we can't. We're stuck here.
Too bad for you, agent. Now, unhand me or I'll have you arrested. You're embarrassing me in front of my clients.
You really don't care, do you? You don't care that you just ordered all those men to their deaths. They're still human beings, even if they're not from your universe, and you just toss them away.
Caesar's eyes look terrified. This isn't Caesar. It's some weak fool from the future. Some coward who would throw away 20,000 lives if it meant avoiding embarrassment.
Is this what the Twilight Histories will become? People like you?
Don't hurt me, he says. Then he smiles. Disappears. The senators are all gone. The Roman officers look stunned.
Order them back, you say. You grab the messenger. Order them back.
You run over to the trumpeters.
Sound the retreat. Order them back.
You're grabbed by the arms. A soldier punches you in the stomach and you collapse to the ground. They tie your arms behind your back and drag you by the feet. The professor and student are tossed in a heap beside you. You hear the distant trumpets and the thunder of hooves, thousands of hooves. It's like some great engine roaring to life. You raise your head enough to look across the field of Agincourt. You see the French knights screaming towards the Roman legions, their armor glistening in the sun, their lances drawn down. The ground rumbles with thunder. You can feel it on your face. You can taste it in the earth. The soldier pinning you to the ground freezes. You see the front ranks of the legions collapse in fear, trying to run back into the men behind them. The thunder grows louder. It's mixed with shouts of terror from the Romans. And then you hear a sound like a bomb. That was The Legions of Agincourt by myself, Jordan Harbor. So, what did you think? Who will win?
Let me know on Facebook or Twitter, and if you enjoyed this show, please give us a rating on iTunes. We could use a bit of love. Wait, before you go, I'm launching a new multi-part show very shortly, and I need your help to build out the main character. It's your character, and it's your adventure, so you get to choose who you play. The adventure will take place in France after the Black Death. It was a time when everyone was eager to get out and celebrate the end of a terrible pandemic. The evil Duchess of Vitre used her vast fortune to build a massive labyrinth, which she filled with beasts, criminals, and traps. She offered a reward for anyone who could survive it. The Twilight Histories is sending you to this world to test your skill against the labyrinth. You can either be a bow-wielding janissary, a dexterous knight, or a meat-muscled Viking. Your gender will be left to your own imagination. All patrons can vote, and some already have. It's leaning towards janissary right now, but voting will continue for another couple days. So get your pick in. One of the easiest ways to do this would be to go to the website at twilighthistories.com and simply follow the link to our Patreon page. Though I'm also posting this on Twitter and Facebook. So come join our Patreon page. Let's build your character. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.